When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare Alley, side street of Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week we are doing something new. It is normally an off week here for Nightmare on Film Street, but we are introducing this new, fun, sporadic podcast that's going to happen occasionally throughout our regular podcast release schedule called Nightmare Alley, and it's where we get to interview a friend or somebody we're a huge fan of, all of the above, filmmakers, creators in the horror genre, and just chat for a little bit and talk about projects they're working on, things they're interested in. This is something that we've wanted to kick off for a real long time, so I'm super excited.
Yeah, it's like a little intermission between our regularly scheduled episodes. Like an intermission interview or a side scream. This is me just opening you up to all the possible
all
other
titles we were working on.
Like, I'm trying to think if there's any other that I could just drop in now before it's gone and done. There were a lot of okay ones.
There were a lot of maybes. There was a big maybe pile.
But I like Nightmare Alley. It's great. It's a little side street in the NOFS podcast map. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I've really been looking forward to it. I'm glad we are finally here.
Yeah, it's a great way for us to kind of deviate from our original format. I mean, the main format of Nightmare on Film Street doesn't really allow for a lot of extra voices and stuff while kind of retaining our candidness. So we're going to use Nightmare Alley to get a chance to talk to people in the industry. And especially during quarantine time, I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this new platform. So I can't wait to see what kind of conversations we get going.
First up this week, we're talking with filmmaker Kaola Raisla, who is the director of Porno, Fangoria's newest film. It's a horror comedy about a group of teens that work at a local movie theater. They're there after hours cleaning up, watching their own movie, and they discover in a hidden room
a nefarious film.
Yes, a piece of satanic occultism that they think is a porno.
I mean, I guess it kind of is. Technically, it is.
It's pretty salacious if you're a Christian teen, let's put it that way. This movie's absolutely hysterical. If you have the newest issue of Fangoria, you've probably seen some very interesting photos regarding the practical effects of this movie. It's probably the funniest movie that we saw on the festival circuit last year. Definitely has a moment that makes everybody scream in the absolute best way possible. And it is available right now for you to watch at home. It originally had a April 10th theatrical release date. You know, unfortunately,
the world ended.
World ended. Movie theaters are closed right now. But you can watch it in a virtual cinema.
Yeah, and they're doing something really cool right now. They are letting you choose an independent cinema to support with your rental. So you actually get to pick which theater you're going to see the movie at virtually, and your dollars will actually go to support that independent theater house.
It's such a great way to support the local theaters that you would like to be going to right now but can't, and want to see open their doors again in the future. To get more information on that, just head over to fangoria.com/watchporno. I gotta say.
And then clear your browser history.
Clear your browser history after that, of course. Porno will also be coming out on VOD early May with the physical release scheduled later for this year, I think July. We sat down and recorded this interview with...
I think it was like the week that this shit went down. Yeah. I think it was the week Corona was like, oh, hey, we're in North America now, for real.
Yeah, it was like the first week of March. Actually, you know what? It was St. Patrick's Day. It was mid-March. So, you know, we're still a little unsure how to talk about it in the interview. We don't get into it too much, but, you know, there's some joking. There's also some sadness, because, I mean, at that point, we really didn't know the scope of things, but The majority of the conversation is about horror movies, so don't let that get you down. We kicked off the interview by asking each other how things are going in our respective quarantine zones. But before that, enjoy the trailer for Kaolo Raistlin's Porno.
You guys hear that? The science of porn is well known. The human brain, when aroused by erotic images, dumps chemicals into the bloodstream, which send the viewer into full throttle, give me more mode.
No, that's right, and we may think that we're just being curious, but that will turn into an obsession.
Everybody doing?
Yeah, how is the end of the world going for you?
Just as boring as the rest of my life.
that's the real tragedy here.
Like, no, you're just like, man, it's gonna go out like this.
I can finally afford groceries, but there's nothing to buy. Shit.
Exactly. So, are the grocery stores as crazy up there as they are down here?
Oh, it's nuts. We tried to go today. There was no soup, no pasta, no pasta sauce, no toilet paper, no nothing.
Insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't really get it.
I went to a drugstore today, and the guy in front of me at this drugstore bought a huge box of condoms and a carton of cigarettes. That was the only thing he bought. I was like, what is this? What's going on? Yeah.
I'm just going to ride it out, you know.
Yeah. He's like, in the world, here I come.
Like, what quarantine do you have in mind?
I know, jeez. It's just him. Just him and the cigarettes and the gun.
Just following the government's orders, man. They said self-isolation. You're like, I think it would be a good idea for that guy to stay away from everybody.
Yeah, no, seriously. For some art project or something.
Yeah, that's probably true. So, Kale, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's great to sit down with you again. Right off the bat, just real curious, how does it feel to be a porno director?
You know, my parents are very proud. They're be happier. It's super exciting. It feels good.
It's not a dream come true, but it feels good.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's very funny because, you know, when I told the title to my mom, she was a little confused at first, and then she just proceeded to tell all of her friends. But she did a thing where she dropped the O, the last O, so she's like, my son directed porn. And
so proud.
Real. Yeah, it was just like, no, it's not porn.
I love imagining her like having conversations with friends at like the grocery store or church. Like, you should come to the house. We'll show you the porn my son directed.
Her doctor was like, I cannot wait to see your movie. Porn. And I was like, no, it's not. Thank you. I'll definitely send you a link or whatever, but it's you know, it's not porn.
Her doctor. Porn. I love that. She's
yeah.
She's like,
mom has been talking a lot about your film. Oh, great. She's a great promoter though.
So how did you first get involved with the movie?
So it's a funny story. I was the writers of the film are two kids I went to film school with. Actually, like, the kind of like core team behind the film, we all went to film school together. So the DP, JP, shot like all of my short films at school. And then Chris and Sarah, the producers, are classmates, because we all went to Columbia, and they have three tracks at Columbia. You can be a writer, a director, or a producer. But they all kind of like put you in the same little pot of people. So you all kind of like mix around, and you know, you match up with people, and you find out who you work well with and who you definitely do not work well with. So Matt and Lawrence, the writers of the film, basically called me up one day and were just like, "Do you want to make a movie?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they're like a horror movie, and I was like, "Yeah."
Yep.
And they're like, "Okay." And I was like, "Wait." I was like, "What's the movie?" And they're like, "We don't know yet."
we don't know yet.
They're like, "We don't know yet, but there is someone who is willing to give us a very small amount of money to make a horror film." And I was like, "Yes." At the time, they were, we went to school in New York, and we'd graduated, and they'd already moved out to LA, and they were working as a writing team, and they were pitching this very big TV show that they had come up with. And so they were a little busy. Otherwise, I think they would have just directed it themselves. Because they're, you know, big horror junkies. And so they, you know, thankfully they were super busy. And so when it came to who would direct it, they mentioned me. And so, yeah, they called me, and I was like, "Is this real?" And they're like, "I think if we move back, it's real." And so that day I bought a plane ticket to LA, and then you know, I was there kind of like within a week.
Wow.
And we were making the movie. I mean, you know, we were very afraid. This was all of our like first feature, so we were very afraid that this money would go away, and so we worked very quickly. We kind of holed up in an Airbnb for a week and just like outlined the film together. And then they wrote the first draft in 4 days. And
wow.
And yeah, so that was kind of like July, August, and then we shot the film in October, November.
Wow. So it was really like from that phone call to filming, like 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah, it was it's kind of like a miracle that there's like that the movie is like even coherent, you know. But what's great is because we all went to school together, we had we're working with a kind of like common language. Matt and Lawrence and I all lived together our last years at Columbia. We had all been broken up with by our girlfriends, so we were kind of like floating around. At the time, I was living on the floor of a friend's apartment, and then we were all like got together. We moved in together, and it was kind of like, it was just the biggest nerd fest ever. We were just kind of just eating pizza and, you know, smelling
being creative. And,
yeah, and being creative. Exactly. But, yeah, so, but it, we did that for two of our years at film school. And then when we all got together for this, you know, week of kind of like brainstorming, it happened really, you know, really quickly because we had that kind of like shared experience.
Yeah, like the thing that scares me the most about thinking of this movie being put together in 2 months or like friggin' a week, really, is the humor, because that's this movie's hilarious, and I could only imagine how long it would take to get good jokes written. But you guys already kind of had a shorthand, like you knew what would make each other laugh.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the great thing about the great thing about jokes is you don't know if they work or not until someone laughs, and because there are three of us, it's a kind of like, you know, we're just trying to crack each other up the entire time. So yeah, it's definitely a kind of like cross section of our shared humor.
So you said you weren't really like, they were the horror guys, so it was weird that, you know, they didn't direct it themselves. But when we talked last, you told me that you were working in film school. You were working on a screenplay that was a cross between Friday Night Lights and Reanimator.
Yes, that's true. So that's very true. I mean, I feel like, you know, some people are like super dyed in the wool kind of like horror first horror people, and I can't because I know people like that. I can't claim to be one of those people. And so, I mean, I feel like I watched a horror movie that is so not scary, it's almost embarrassing, when I was very young, and then just didn't watch them again until kind of like mid high school. I was like so afraid of horror films.
Do you remember what movie it was?
Yeah, we're going to need to know what movie that was.
Yeah. It's this movie called, I think it's called The House.
The House.
And it's not the Japanese film House, dude. It's like either House or The House. The cover is like a kind of like severed hand.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's House. Yeah.
I went back and watched that movie later on in life, and I was like, this is like a comedy. I'm so afraid of it.
It's like puppets.
I think the fact that I was like 4 years old when I watched it, I think really affected me.
Yeah, it'll get you. I mean, there's a four-year-old kid in that movie that just goes missing and nobody knows what happened to him.
You really remember that movie.
I watched it a lot as a kid.
But yeah, I don't remember what your original question was. But yeah, but I mean, really, it's kind of like, you know, Matt is the like hardcore, like has seen everything, knows everything, like knows all the kind of like, you know, from the smallest films to the biggest films, like knows all of that stuff. And so I would kind of defer to him as far as like, you know, horror authority.
So do you know what kind of
movie? But I do love Reanimator.
Oh, good.
And that's something I discovered, like, I think after I graduated from undergrad, and it was just, you know, my reentry, so to speak, into horror was through horror comedy. I don't know, maybe my favorite horror film. I don't know if it's even qualified as a horror film. But, I mean, I'm sure it does. The vampire movie, which is like The Lost Boys.
Oh, totally.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, there's like gore in there, right? But like, you know, it's, I don't think that you would call Lost Boys a horror comedy, but it's definitely funny. And so it's kind of like Lost Boys and then American Werewolf in London were kind of like the two, like, big films for me, like kind of like getting into horror, and then Reanimator. So I was kind of obsessed with Reanimator, and then I discovered Friday Night Lights. And I was just like, I love Friday Night Lights so much. You know, we kind of had to, at the beginning of film school, they're just like, you know, come up with three ideas for feature films, and then they do this thing where they will select for you from your ideas which script you will work on. And so I was just like, I don't know. I came up with this very elaborate idea for a movie about a kind of like a junior college football team that goes, that kind of like drowns on a booze cruise and then is reanimated by like a kind of like disgraced scientist. Anyways.
It sounds amazing.
No, it sounds great. Like, please tell me your teachers threw everything else out and greenlit this one.
I had some other like more serious films and they're just like, oh, you need to do this this zombie football team. And I was like, man, this is amazing.
I thought this was the throwaway idea.
I know.
So,
that's the origin of that.
Well, it's interesting too that the horror comedies that, it's interesting too that the horror comedies you really enjoy are the ones that I think really do a great job of handling both the horror and comedy, not just separately. Like, one doesn't stop for the other. Like Lost Boys, American Werewolf in London, they do both of those things at the exact same time, and it's great to know that that's your backstory or your back interest leading into such a good horror comedy. How was production? Like how was everything on set? Like I got to assume it was just full of chuckles.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I think that like, you know, we laughed a lot. The cast was so awesome. They were so good and so professional. And we were supposed to shoot in LA, but then ended up shooting in New York because that's where we found the movie theater. And so we kind of shifted everything back to New York. And what's great about casting in New York is there's such a deep pool of talent because of the theater community, and there's like still a reasonable amount of television that's shot there, and so there's like, you know, they're all relatively newcomers. Although Larry is now on the High School of the Musical, the TV show, the musical, or whatever.
Wow.
On Disney, which I find very funny. He was shooting this Disney show, and then they let him take a break.
I can't wait for those tweens to check his IMDb page.
Exactly. Actually, the guy who plays Ricky, when we like kind of put up the title, he was like, I have to remove myself from the IMDb because I also like part-time coach, like I'm a teacher. I teach PE. He teaches PE.
Wow.
For young kids. And he's like, they're going to Google me. And I
yeah.
Until the film is out, I can't really have that up there. So, but anyways, the cast were amazing. They were super, super professional and you know, very kind of, helpful for me because, you know, I directed other films before, but this was, you know, a kind of like a larger undertaking, even though it's a small film. And yeah, I would just throw stuff out there in the same way that, you know, when we were kind of like coming up with an idea for the script, just kind of like pitch them ideas and they would just roll with it and try whatever. And it was great.
Do you know if they if any of them came from like a church background? Because they play, these characters are all so, well, I guess they're really well written, but like the performances are spot on. Like I've met these people before growing up in church.
No, I mean I don't think any of them really. Although what's funny is the guy who plays Bill, the guy who plays Mr. Pike, his wife is a reverend.
Wow.
In church. And so it was kind of it was kind of amazing when he came in, because I think we had a kind of different idea for who that character would be. A lot of what we were looking up when we were coming to the idea for the film were there are these things called 3X coaches.
Okay.
And 3X stands for XXX, which stands for pornography, and what they are people like religious people who coach you through porn addiction.
Okay.
If you go online and just like look up these like websites for these 3X coaches, they are amazing. They're so awesome. It's such a rich vein information and comedy, and actually we have like an idea for a sequel to the film that involves 3X coaches. But I think that the original idea was that this guy was a kind of more like Joel Osteen, kind of like young, kind of like maybe like hip guy. When Bill came in, he had such an easy way of like being a kind of like, he has a little bit of a little drawl, like a southern drawl, and you know, he just spoke kind of like a preacher speaks like, and it wasn't until later that I found out that his wife is actually like a preacher. So it was kind of amazing. So when we played at Fantasia Fest, she came and watched the movie.
Yeah.
And she was into it. She liked it. So.
Well, that's good.
I find that to be a validating thing.
It could have gone a lot worse. Like, this is what you did last summer? God damn it, Bill.
I know.
So how was you talked about bringing into Fantasia? How was that world premiere at South by Southwest last year?
It was great. It was so much fun. I mean, I think R.I.P. South by Southwest.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a kind of like not to go on a tangent, but like it's kind of like heartbreaking to know that, you know, our film was so small, and we were selected to play in competition, and you know, you just meet so many like amazing filmmakers who have like, you know, are coming from all over the place with their films, and it's, they built still like an amazing kind of like, even in the you know, small time that you're there, they foster such a kind of like strong like community of filmmakers, and you know, the festival itself is amazing, so it's kind of like heartbreaking to know that, like, you know, to have the kind of like euphoria of getting in to such an amazing festival, and then have it kind of like yanked. I can't even imagine. No, go ahead.
Sorry, especially too with like porno being such a fun like comedy movie. It's got such a good audience vibe. I know it's kind of up in the air right now, but with Fangoria, you guys were planning on doing like a theatrical release and stuff. Do you guys have any news in regards to that? Or
I don't know that we have anything official to announce.
Yeah.
Authorized to announce it, but I you know, our planned release date was April 10th, and I don't know that any theaters are going to be open on April 10th. Yeah, so it's that kind of, you know, and stuff moves so quickly. We had a call last week. You know, we've been having weekly calls about like the promotion of the film, and all of that. And that's kind of all kind of, you know, if our film doesn't end up coming out in theaters, it'll be the smallest footnote of this entire thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, this is like full credit to Kim on this one. The other day she was saying like, this is the opportunity for drive-in movie theaters to come back in full swing. Like we could, like,
I know.
Yeah, like regardless of what happens in the next little while, we could still see a movie like Porno at the drive-in with everybody still, sealed in our cars,
social distance away.
everybody in their bubbles. Yeah, safely, socially distanced. And, you know, it could also work.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, like it's weird to bring up because it's kind of a downer. But
well, and it's only been like 4 days, so this is all still really surreal.
No, I know. I think that I was just kind of like just brushing my teeth the other night, and I was like, this is so weird. It's just so weird.
It's odd. Like your movie is already like nostalgic for the, maybe not nostalgic, but it takes place in the early 90s, and even coming out now in 2020, it could take place in 2019, and we'd be like, those carefree days of going to a movie theater.
I know. I was watching it like some cooking show on Netflix or something, and you just see people at restaurants like touching each other, and you're just like, whoa. It's only been in effect for like 5 days.
Yeah, it's like already rewired our brains.
Yeah, it's insane.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So you you said, the movie's being released through Fangoria. When did you first come in contact with them, and how's that relationship been?
I don't remember. It was, we had a kind of like long festival run, and I don't know if it was at, oh man, my memory's so bad. I think it was before Overlook. We were contacted, by Fangoria and the people at Good Deed, who have a horror arm called Cranked Up Films.
Okay.
They put out like Nightmare Cinema and some other films. So I think they did. There's a very recent film that also played at South by Southwest. Stars. I don't know. Maybe Will Forte. This is thrilling.
Oh, podcast. Extraordinary.
Yeah, it was
Extraordinary,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so good. I think Good Deed, and I don't know if it was Good Deed proper or Cranked Up, but so they put out Extraordinary.
That's a hilarious movie.
So they contacted us and with a partnership with Fangoria. And so I mean, I think, the people at Good Deed were super cool, and obviously, when we heard about Fangoria, everybody kind of flipped out. So
it's such a perfect pairing.
It felt like to us, like, oh man, this is so perfect. It's a kind of like ideal scenario for us. So we were so thrilled.
That's so cool. Yeah, like rewatching it the other day, it's amazing. It feels like this is a movie that they would have greenlit themselves. Like this is a movie that they put through production and not just not just acquiring. Like it really has the DNA of a Fangoria film in it. Did you guys grow up reading Fangoria at all?
Again, I was very afraid of horror films. I do remember I do remember I have a very vivid memory of I would go to the grocery store with my mother, and I would immediately go to the magazine aisle, and there would be issues of Fangoria. I distinctly remember grabbing a magazine and putting it in front of the cover of the Fangoria magazine. So much. I don't want to look at this. So, that was my relationship to Fangoria for most of my young life. Again, I'm sure if you asked Matt, he was probably all about it, but not me. I was very, very afraid.
I mean, I think that's probably what they were aiming for at least half the public. So, you know, you're doing fine.
No, absolutely. And but what's kind of amazing is, like, you know, with the kind of like rebirth of Fangoria and Phil and all the people there, it's kind of like, I feel like it's become like a very, very, very kind of like cool brand. And they have, you know, the things that they're doing, you know, where they have these amazing filmmakers interview each other for the cover stories. Like, come on, like, this is like, I think they're making amazing stuff with that magazine. And I think that if you're into film at all, you know, like horror or otherwise, you're going to want to like check it out. I mean, you know, it's just like, oh, they got Paul Thomas Anderson to interview like Jordan Peele, right? So you're just like, come on, like, who doesn't want to read that interview? Right?
Yeah, like just the idea of that was amazing.
Well, it's cool that they like passed the torch to like the previous cover story director email or interviews the next cover story. So you have,
I know, it's so smart. It's so smart, and you know, it's just like I think kind of like must read kind of stuff. It was Danny Boyle is interviewing the woman who did Saint Maud.
Yes, yeah, Rose
in
Glass
in the new issue.
That's
have you guys seen the Saint Maud movie yet?
We have.
We have.
Did you like it?
You have. Is it so good? I haven't seen it.
Oh no, it is so good.
it's very spooky.
It's so you've seen the trailer, right?
Yeah.
It is. It's a much like lower key movie than the trailer sells it to be.
Well, I mean, such are trailers, really.
Yeah,
but, that is true. But yeah,
but like, it feels like, you know. No, go ahead.
Okay, I was just gonna say we talked to Rose Glass and she was selling it more as like a taxi driver story, but if Travis Bickle was like a young female nurse in the South,
hello,
the seaside of Scotland or something, it was like, yes, that is a movie I very much want to see.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, that sounds great. The trailer looks so good.
Another movie that just when you think about it, you're just a little trepidatious. You're like, well, I hope it hits the theater. I don't know what's happening right now.
Oh, yeah. When was that supposed to release?
Oh, shit.
Soon,
supposed to be the
right?
end of this month.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the end of March.
Heartbreaking. You know, they pushed back the movie Antlers. I'm so psyched to see that movie.
Yes.
Man. Crazy.
So are you going like deep dive into horror now? Is that what's happening? Like you are like in the deep end of it?
I don't know. Something has come over me. I don't know. It feels, you know, like a disappointment. I mean, honestly, like the script that we're working on now is kind of like more straight horror. Like,
ooh.
And so I'm really excited about it. I think we're kind of like, it's in a place where it's like it's almost readable by human eyes, but I don't know. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if it was not something I like really planned on, but I don't know. This experience has been so great, and the kind of like community around the genre is so awesome, and the people are so cool, and you know, I don't know. It kind of just makes you want to, you know,
stay forever.
Yeah, right?
I don't know. I kind of have. Like,
I also.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, also, I think that, like, having made a horror comedy, I think that, like, what's great is it's like, you don't have to just. I think that you can. It pairs well with so many different genres, right? Like, I feel like you can put, like, you can have like a horror film with a little bit of something else, or you can have a different kind of film with a little bit of horror. You know what I mean? And I think that those things like I don't know. It really goes well together. I think, you know, you watch a movie like In Fabric, which I watched at Overlook. I don't know
so
how you guys feel about that movie, but I super love that movie, and it's just like, would you call that a straight horror film? I don't know.
Yeah,
but
it could also be a comedy.
Yeah, or you know,
or just weird.
or just weird, but it's just like, you know, I think that you know, it's kind of like expanding in a great way, and like, I don't know, I think it's a super exciting space to work in.
I don't know, like talking to you, I have this feeling that like, you're into horror more than you think you are, and you always had been. Like my one question,
maybe
like when we talked last time, you were the porno that the kids watch in the movie. You were taking, mm-hmm. you said you were taking a bunch of inspiration from Kenneth Anger films. Is that something that you already knew about before going into making porno, or did you do some research and that's just what came across?
No, yeah. I mean, I went to undergrad in Santa Cruz, which is, by the way, the town that
Lost Boys,
that Santa Carla is based on. Yep, that boardwalk is Santa Cruz.
Actually,
Santa Cruz was the murder capital of the world for a little while because they had like two or three active serial killers at once.
Wow!
At one point, including the guy from Mindhunter. Have you guys watched Mindhunter?
Yeah.
You mean the BTK guy? Like the...
No, not that guy. The guy, the big guy with the mustache.
The tall guy.
Oh, Ed Kemper?
Yeah. Yes.
Is that him? Yeah.
Ed Kemper's mom was, I think, worked at UC Santa Cruz, and he murdered a bunch of girls in Santa Cruz.
Fuck.
And so it did have the reputation for being the murder capital of the world. Anyways, it's a super hippie... It's a super hippie town, and I studied, like, I did, like cinema studies there. I didn't do production. And so we were watching, of course, like, all different kinds of things. Weirdly, Santa Cruz is the UC Santa Cruz is the biggest archive of Satyajit Rai films. So, you know, but because it's, you know, a very liberal place and it has, like, a history, there's a lot of, like, queer cinema and stuff that is shown there. I went to a midnight screening of Scorpio Rising, which, you know, it's at the same theater where you would show like horror movies and stuff like that. And so, I was kind of like super aware of Kenneth Anger before this. And then I think it was Matt who suggested that we look, you know, when we were talking about the film within the film, he was like, oh, it should be like, you know, the weird Kenneth Anger film or something like that. And so I was immediately like, oh yeah. And so we kind of just started like digging back through stuff. You can watch most of his films on YouTube.
We did that today. We watched the ones that you'd recommended last time, the Scorpio Rising, Invocation of My Demon Brother, which I definitely see a lot.
Yeah, man,
I see a lot of that in your movie, which is really cool.
Yeah, they're very like trippy, crazy stuff. I mean, he was like this kind of like queer Satanist experimental filmmaker, you know, and so his stuff is like really awesome out there.
Yeah, he's a bizarre dude. I saw him just talking for like 40 minutes about Aleister Crowley.
Oh yeah,
and he came
he
out
thinking now.
Yeah, no doubt. But he came out wearing a New York Rangers jersey, and he took off the R and the S, so it just said Anger across his chest.
Hell yeah,
yeah, it was super cool.
He's still alive. I think he's like 93 or something.
Yeah, there was another interview of Nicholas Winding Refn interviewing him.
Yeah.
I just say NWR for anybody that knows.
I know. What's that guy doing next?
I think he's got his own streaming service. I think that's all he's working on.
He has his own streaming service, really?
Yeah. It's called By NWR. So BYNWR. And the tagline is culture is for everyone.
That sounds like public access.
Yeah, well, it's kind of public. It's kind of like public access for cult films on the internet, and it's almost like a really weird midnight Criterion where each month they put in like four or five new movies, and they're all from his personal collection because he just for fun restores old reels that he digs out of like estate sales.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really. I know this guy sounds like he's got a lot of time and is the coolest person.
Do you guys subscribe to this? Does it cost money?
It's free.
Really?
Yeah. So that's always been the whole idea is that he wants people to see these movies because culture is for everybody is the idea.
So it is public access.
That's amazing.
It is. You're right. It is public access. My editor's here today. Thank you.
Well, that's amazing. I have to check that out.
Before we let you go, I would like to talk to you about the practical effects of your movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah, just I'm going to feel like a real idiot if we hit stop on this recording without talking about that. Because the practical effects in your movie are absolutely amazing. And like they're sparing, but when they come, they look real to life. And that's very horrifying.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the kind of like practical effects or the kind of effects that we kind of grew up watching, and I say grew up very you know, with a grain of salt, since I didn't really start watching these things until I was like 15 or something, but yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Sam Raimi, obviously John Carpenter, that kind of stuff, or all the kind of stuff like we aspire to hit, you know. I think those are the kind of things that we super loved, and so, you know, we did not have a huge budget for this film. I think that much is clear. But we wanted to, you know, where we could really put that kind of stuff on the screen. And so we kind of like wrote to the idea that we would be able to pull off some of these effects. And the guys that we found to do it were just incredible, incredible guys.
They're just like a couple of young kids, right?
Yeah. So there's my friend Brendan shot his thesis film, and in it, you know, it's about this woman who feels like she has these like fibers in her body, and you know, she wants to like cut them out of herself.
Ooh.
and it's a super creepy, and so there's a scene where she like cuts her stomach open and starts digging around inside with like a pair of scissors. And he found this guy who was not yet 21 at the time, I remember, because we had to buy him beer. But he was so professional, and like not just like his effects were incredible, but also just like in the way that he was worked with the actors, and you know how he conducted himself, and he was like so amazingly professional, like way more professional than anybody else on that set. Because we were all film students, we were just like, this guy is fucking so baller, and he's just like, oh man, I don't know, do you think it looks good? I was like, dude, you're kidding yourself. You don't think that everybody's trying to like rack their brains trying to write something for you to make. And so, you know, like I always just remembered that guy. His name was like Greg Pakulski. And so when it came time to do this, I was like, dude, we should find that kid from Brendan's thesis film. And we found him, and he had just started his own little studio. This guy named Brett Schmidt. And they had just come back from Sicario 2.
Wow.
Wow.
Like, you guys did the effects for Sicario 2? And he was like, no. He's like, come over here. And on his table, he had laid out this human leg that was been like blown off of someone. I was like, holy shit. He's like, we did this leg. I was like, you only did this leg in Sicario 2? He's like, yeah. I was like, well, this leg looks fucking awesome. And so,
made the movie.
And so it was kind of, you know, it was, we really lucked out because, you know, they're both super, super, super talented guys, and just they couldn't be cooler. And you know, I think they're kind of like work speaks for themselves, and we're lucky to catch them basically like right at the start of their like their little studio, because you know, you have a feeling that these guys are gonna like be doing a bunch of like big amazing things. So we lucked out, we got them on board, and yeah, they're kind of like the masterminds behind these things, these specs.
Yeah, I can only imagine they're going to be more in demand now, especially in the horror community. Like, obviously, they're working on Sicario, Sicario 2, but nobody's talking about that leg. Everybody on film Twitter that has seen this movie is talking specifically about the practical effects. So, it works really well with the story you guys had and how you shot around it. It all really came together, and just probably like the biggest audience reaction of 2019 on the festival circuit, I think.
Yeah, it was I'm kind of desensitized to it at this point. But like when we first screened it, we knew it was we knew it was coming, and then when it happened, we were just kind of, we could not stop laughing. We were laughing so hard. It was so much fun. And yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing where you're like, you know, there's this one big effect and you kind of like want people to go in cold because, you know, if you don't know what's coming, it's like, oh man, the reaction is so great. So great. So, but you know, even if you do, I don't think that, you know, you can really prepare yourself for it.
You really
not
can.
To over,
you really
not
can.
To oversell it, but, but yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, man. It's been great. I really look forward to everybody seeing it. And good luck with the release, however it comes. I'm sure people are going to want to see it. I'm sure people will seek it out however they can.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Kaolo, for taking the time to talk with us. Thank you to everybody out there listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed the inaugural episode of Nightmare Alley.
Tweet at us at NOFS Podcast and let us know what you think about this side story, who you think we should have on our interview slate next, people who have projects happening, even in these weird, crazy times. We're so excited to do more of these.
You can watch porno right now at home. Surprise. just head over to fangoria.com/watchporno to support your local movie theater and watch a hilarious horror comedy. You can also follow Porno on Twitter at Porno the Movie. You'll also find links for Fangoria, for everybody involved, including Kaolo and the writers and producers Matt and Lawrence there. Especially let us know what you thought of Porno on Twitter at NOFS Podcast. On Reddit at reddit.com/r/nightmareonfilmstreet. And of course, in the Horror Movie Fiend Club on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofnofs.
We'll be back at you next week with the fully regularly scheduled episode of Nightmare on Film Street. So tune in on wherever you're getting this podcast. That will drop next Thursday.
But until then, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.